This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
From Liam, you love Luther Burden Jr. so much, you've talked about him for years, but he's Jahan Dotson? Question mark. I compared him to Jahan Dotson in that he takes plays off and he doesn't play out those plays. By the way, stylistically, yeah, there are similarities to what Jahan Dotson looked like at Penn State and what Luther Burden looked like the last 2 years, his 2 years ago in particular at Missouri. But the thing that you knew when they traded Jahan Dotson, what the reason was, he was not the guy that played it out. They wanted grinders, they wanted hustlers, they wanted dive on the loose ball guys, and he wasn't that. And Luther Burden has a rep of taking plays off if they're not coming in his direction. That was specifically what Quinn said before they traded Dotson, that we need to see him play out the play even when it's not coming to him. So that's why he was on my short list of players that I think they would pass on, along with Pierce Jr. and Omarion Hampton, because I just don't see Hampton as a first-round back. I see him as a really good back, but along with eight or nine others, you know, guys that you could sort of throw into a hat and pick one out, and there's just as good a chance of anybody that you pick out being the best one in the group. All right, do we have Ben? We have Ben. Ben Standing is with us, of course, every Monday and Friday. Maybe more than that this week. We'll see what Ben's availability is. What Adam Peters speaks on Wednesday, correct?
No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow, late afternoon, I believe it is.
That's correct. You will be off the air.
So tune in to Team 980. I'm sure Chris will carry some of Adam Peters during his show. So Ben had today, he has put out his mock Washington Commanders draft. You should read it by going to The Athletic. You should follow Ben on X on Twitter at Ben Standing, and you should listen to his podcast, Last Man Standing. So we won't go through the entire draft, but I think people are interested in what you're thinking at the beginning of this draft. And you have two different trade scenarios, so I'll let you go through each of the two trade scenarios that you think can happen and you'd like to see happen.
Right. I mean, look, you know, when we do these like team-specific mock drafts, you know, you're looking at it purely through the lens of your group. You're not factoring in necessarily what's going to happen around them. This is a draft where a lot of teams would love to trade down. I had one GM from another team tell me the other day, or say the other day, that like basically once you get past the top three picks, you're kind of looking at a lot of second rounders in most years. So this is not a draft where teams are like dying to you know, they're not coveting a lot of the players here. But obviously they're, you know, talented. There's talented players. Second round picks are good guys too. So the question though is like, how many are people, you know, how many positions or players are people going to want to trade up for? And that's where the rub is. We talk about the quarterbacks. I just read a whole bunch of things today online for different, you know, insidery stuff from different outlets, and I'm almost more confused than ever about what the quarterback situation is going to look like. So, you know, if teams are willing to trade up for a quarterback or maybe an offensive tackle, then trading down can make a lot of sense. So I went with that theory. I had them trading down to 39 in the from 29 to 39 with the Bears. The Bears have the 10th pick, and then they have two in the second round. They are doing everything they can to help Caleb Williams. Like, they were very aggressive this offseason in terms of fixing the offensive line. They still need a left tackle. Unless they trade up from 10, they're not getting one. So trading up at 39 to get one, whether that's Josh Simmons or Josh Connerly, probably makes sense. And then Washington picks up, what did I have here? An extra, sorry, Kevin. extra third-round pick. I've done so many of these things, I forget what I'm doing. An extra third-round pick. And obviously, I think the thing for Washington is, if we're going to say edge rusher is their top need, which I think is fair, like, that's one of the deeper positions in this draft. There'll be like five or six guys that go round one, but there's another, you know, possibly five, six guys who go in round two. And I think they can still get that, a good player there and an extra pick. So that's what I did with having them take Nick Scorton, the defensive end from Texas A&M. I've talked about him.
Yeah, you have.
Kind of from the jump. He may not be there at 38. He may be going late first. He's not really been discussed that way publicly, but every time I talk to people privately, you know, in the league, I get more positive vibes because he is like a relentless player. He doesn't have the same athletic upside that some of the other guys do, but you know, just a relentless it's attacking the quarterback, getting after the run. You know, he's very mature. He was a 19-year-old team captain at Purdue in 2023, transferred to Texas A&M last year. I had him put on a bunch of weight. His sack numbers declined. He now has shed that weight. He's back to kind of where he was at Purdue, around like 260. And, I think people are big fans of what he can do. But he still may be there at 38 because it is a deep class at defensive end. So that was my thought there at the first pick. Again, whether, you know, can they trade down, you know, We'll see. But I think in the ideal world and somewhat realistically, I think that's what would make the most sense.
Right. Okay, so you also had the scenario in which they end up, you know, not making a trade. And that's another player you've talked about for a while. So just tell everybody, if they don't trade at 29, who you think they'll pick.
Yeah, so I have Donovan Ezeraku, the defensive end from Syracuse, you know, very bendy edge rusher, had, 16, 17 sacks last year, tons of tackles for loss. You know, he might be he's a little light. He's only in the 240s, and that may make him a little bit more of like a designated pass rusher to start. But
right.
I know, like, our guy Dane Brugler, you know, thinks that his athletic traits show a guy that, you know, is going to be able to morph into more of a three down player truly over time. And, you know, he's, again, another guy, team captain, constant energy out there on the field. And there's a lot to like. I think the question with him is, you know, I need to know where this defensive end class starts to go off the board. If we hear like three, if there's like three or four guys who are going into top 15, which is conceivable, then, you know, the Jalen Walkers, Mikael Williams, Shamar Stewart, so on, then the defensive end.
Mike Green can't make it to 29. No way.
No. I think he's going to teams as well. But, like, so if that's the case, and Ezeraku can get bumped up to, like, you know, 19 to the Buccaneers, he's sort of like, you know, when you factor in the upside, he's sort of like one of the last one or two guys in that. Maybe he's not in the top tier, but, like, you know, he's like right there. And then it starts to go into that next tier where guys like Scorton, which is a little lower of a ceiling. But on the other hand, if the edge rushers fall, which is, you know, also possible, the evaluations for this group are all over the place. Then at that point, then he may slip enough to get to 29. And, you know, again, the key with the defensive ends and the defensive tackles, teams may look at it and say, look, we like this player, but we think we can get a pretty good end or tackle in round two or three. So instead, let's take a position that's a little bit thinner, whether that's offensive tackle or cornerback or receiver, and get that guy, and then we'll get that later. So if that happens, then they can, Washington gets that guy. But, you know, ultimately they need whatever the scenario, they've got to come away with more from the edge rusher position. You know, they've got some decent players in Dorrance Armstrong and Dietrich Wise and so on, but, you know, there's almost no upside. The only player under 25 years old is Javonte Jean-Baptiste, the seventh-round pick from last year. So they need to get younger. They need to get more explosive. Whether that's in the first or second round, I think they've got to make that a priority.
Do you think – I want to come back to the edge rushers in a moment. Do you think they did enough in the offseason so far? And there's still one big swing left, and that would be Trey Hendrickson. He's still out there. There's still a possibility. By the way, what if Cincinnati goes edge in the first round because the best player on their board is an edge? Then there's a chance he could get traded before the second round begins. And maybe at that point they take the second rounder because I think we all kind of feel like the price has been too high. But putting him to the side for a moment, have they done enough to be in position to draft the best player on their board at any position other than the obvious being quarterback?
I think the answer is yes, but that's also factor in, like, you know, free agency is not over. It's over, like, nobody's signing anybody anymore. And that has a lot to do with, like, compensatory picks. Guys who get signed after free agency don't count towards that formula. You still have a guy like Za'Darius Smith out there. You know, who had, what, 9 sacks last year for 2 teams. You know, there's a lot of vets out there. If you look at the list of available players, that you're like, whoa, that's kind of a lot of guys out there you think could be a starter or a rotation.
Well, so, they're players that could be expendable post-draft that could be available that could be very interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, like, the way I've been saying it is, like, I think they have done enough across the board that if they had to go play week one tomorrow, you know, I think they'd be – generally speaking, okay. Like, I mean, you know, some spots again could use more, particularly from a long-term perspective. They have so many players on one-year deals, and then they have obviously some older guys up to Bobby Wagner and Zach Ertz, where you're like, hey, what's the succession plan? So I think that there's those factors. But in terms of this year, you know, again, in general, I think they have done enough to at least be kind of where they were last year, and maybe, you know, obviously a little bit better in some cases. You know, needless to say, you know, left tackle, wide receiver, hopefully stopping the run better with Dietrich Wise, Javon Kinlaw. But, you know, at the same point, like, again, in terms of the longer-term build, they need more. So I do think that they could go somewhat, you know, best player available if they wanted at 29 or in the second round. But, you know, the edge rusher position is one, like I said, where there just isn't much upside there. You know, they got okay players, and, you know, maybe it's better than that, but
yeah,
that I just think that's where they need, you know, at least, just even say a cornerback. You know, the upside is that Marshon Lattimore is healthy, and that if he's able to return and play at a somewhere Pro Bowl-ish level, well, then that's a huge upgrade over, you know, what they had even a year ago. And same thing with Deebo Samuel in terms of recovering from his situation. If he's able to look like a guy we've seen in the past, well, that's a huge deal. But again, he's only on a one-year deal. So, you know, I think it's more for me like the longer-term issues or the concern than like 2025.
Do they have a double-digit sack guy on their roster right now?
I don't think so. I was saying your producer was saying he heard John Keim had it on his podcast that came out yesterday. We talked, a bunch of us from the beat were on this episode, and somewhere in there I mentioned, you know, the one thing this team could do that would really help itself is tell Daron Payne you're going to get John Allen after this year if you don't have a big year, so he can think this is like a contract year, and then maybe he goes back to the double-digit sack guy that we saw when he was going into his last year a couple years ago. Maybe you have to pull a mind trick like that. But other than that, no, I don't see a guy that you would say has double-digit sacks. I mean, you know, Dorrance Armstrong did what he did last year. You know, he had some good sack numbers at Dallas, but that was playing with Micah Parsons. Here, they don't have that. So, no, I don't think they have a guy like that. I mean, maybe Frankie Louvu, but, like, you know, him getting eight sacks is plenty good. They need more than just him.
What did he have last year? He had 8? Because I would say that Louvu's the guy that in year two, if they've added, you know, some ability to create more down and distance passing situations where they can be even more creative with him, that he could easily be a double-digit sack guy?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, a sack is important, but, like, it's not just that play. It's the overall, you know, right. So I'm just saying, like, for Lou, like, projecting Luvu as a double-digit sack, I don't really – I think that's probably just, like, overstating what it really means that they're looking for it from out of him. If he gets there, sure, but it's like last year with Fowler. I mean, yeah, he had 10.5 sacks, but I'm not looking at him as, like, some premier pass rusher in the league the way
– Well, they wouldn't let him go if he was.
Right. I mean, he basically got benched in the NFC Championship game because – you know, he was limited to what he could do otherwise. So, you know, they need more coming off the edge. And obviously these things trickle down. You have somebody off the edge who commands a double team. Now all of a sudden that frees up other players and so on. So that's the thing. They just don't have enough guys that the other team has to say, oh boy, we really have to watch this player. That's just not happening right now.
Ben's a multi-time mock draft champion. His overall first-round mock will be out on Wednesday at The Athletic. You know, back to the edge rushers in this draft, because you said something, and I think it's really interesting, and that is, where's the cutoff? You know, which player is the last one to go that there's a consensus on, there are your first-round guys? Now we got a bunch of guys that really should go night two at some point, not on night one. And, you know, Carter obviously is, you know, starts that list. Walker, Green, to me, might be the best pass rusher that's not named Carter in the draft. Stewart, in his lack of production, but still, I mean, you know, people love him. Mykel Williams is one. And I think Ezeraku would be the other. Who am I forgetting?
Well, there's,
did I mention Walker, Georgia, who's, by the way, really such a strange sort of hybrid player anyway. But after that, I mean, you said that you think maybe, you know, Ezeraku will be the cutoff for that. And so what if he does go before Washington? Now we're into either a trade back, and if you don't trade back, more likely than not, an edge rusher won't be the best player on their board.
Right. Well, like James Pierce from Tennessee, from a trades and production standpoint, like that's a guy that would absolutely fit the bill. But there's some questions that have been floated out there.
Lots of questions.
Yeah. More like just, you know, how much does he burn to play football? Kind of in that, exactly, in that vein. And so that's, you know, is dropping him seemingly on the public mock drafts and things like that down late first, if not into the second round, and so he could be a guy, but you know, he has this one trait that Adam Peters likes, and that is he ran the fastest 10-yard split at the combine. That's a trait that Peters used a lot at San Francisco, and you know, imagine he brought that mentality here. So if that's an overriding factor, then maybe he's a guy. But when you look at, you know, how this team, you know, targeted players last year, it just doesn't feel like Pierce would be one of those guys. I know you talked the other day about guys you didn't think would make sense for Washington, and he would be sort of on that list for me. But then, you know, look, I mean, there again, Scorton, I mean, he, you know, this is the perception versus the reality angle. On the public side of things, he's not getting that type of attention, and he isn't some crazy, you know, speed, bendy, athletic type of player, but he's also plays very hard, is productive, et cetera. So, you know, it feels like he's probably in that tier below because of the upside. There's a couple other guys like a Landon Jackson from Arkansas, kind of
love him,
hits that as well.
But
can you get that guy in the second round? I think that's where, you know, the question is. So yeah, I mean, I think if Ezeraku is gone as well as those other guys you mentioned ahead of him, you know, that's where another position can come into play. And by the way, like, you know, because there is depth at on the line, you know, it may make more sense to say, hey, we don't think there's enough cornerbacks late round two. Let's take one of these guys that we like here at the top and then get an edge rusher later. Or maybe it's, you know, something even crazier, you know, Nick Emmanuel, who might be the best athlete overall in this whole draft, safety out of South Carolina, big time playmaker as well. He could be I think Dan Quinn could have a lot of fun with a guy like that, but you know, it safety isn't necessarily, it's arguably a need, especially post Jeremy Chinn, but it's not like a screaming need. Again, they have Will Harris. But, you know, bigger picture, boy, that could be a lot of fun. Offensive tackle, obviously they just moved Brandon Coleman to the right side, so you're thinking, okay, they've got some upside there. Sure, but could they have bigger upside? Is Josh Connerly as a first-round pick, does that raise the offensive line ceiling compared to Brandon Coleman, a third-round pick last year? So I think if edge rusher is gone, if that top tier is gone and they view it the same, they could pivot to another position. Also, say like an Emeka Ibuka receiver out of Ohio State, I wouldn't put a receiver as like a big priority at the moment. But again, long term, Deebo Samuel and Noah Brown are both on 1-year deals. Ibuka is one of the cleaner prospects in his draft class. So I think there's a lot in play for them whether the edge guys are there or not.
You know, you mentioned Amano Worry, the safety from South Carolina. Just overall, I know you've mentioned this with me before, and I totally agree with it. They have to increase overall their team speed. Both sides of the ball, I would say, too. It's not just one side of the ball, okay? I mean, obviously, Luvu can run. Sanra still can run. Marshawn Lattimore can run. But they could stand to increase their overall team speed. I don't know if Amano Worry is the right fit or not, because I think Starks is actually the better player at safety overall. But Amano Worry is a ridiculous athlete, one of the best athletes in this draft. But they really do overall, I would say offensively too, they've got to increase their team speed.
Oh, 1,000,000%. I mean, I've been saying for a while, like, you know, when it comes to offense, I don't really care what the position is. They need more speed. They need more explosive plays. Like, you know, they had some really creative stuff last year with Austin Ekeler that got some big games. But, you know, that was not just – sometimes you just need a guy to, here's the ball, go make a play. And he can do that. And somebody can do that. And they just don't really have that guy. The closest thing they had to like a real burner last year was De'Ami Brown, who, you know, obviously he left on a pretty – on a high because he really – played well late in the season, but overall, he wasn't like a guy that was a big volume pass catcher or anything. But they need some. They need that element for sure. I mean, I think out of the backfield would be a lot of fun. And you know, in terms of things they could do, you know, if Travion Henderson from Ohio State is there, he's not like a 4-3 burner, but he's plenty fast. He's very elusive, tremendous blocker in the passing game. Can catch the ball. Team captain, like he checks tons of boxes if he's available. It's just a matter of the position value. Do you want to take that? Again, they have Brian Robinson. They have Austin Ekeler. They brought back Jeremy McNichols. They were fine. They just, you know, and sometimes but more than that, but they also just weren't the most explosive group. And then last year, you know, towards the end of the year, the run game just became more inconsistent. Maybe that changes with the switches on the offensive line. But yeah, I absolutely more team speed on both sides of the ball. You know, and you know, when you talk about the defense, those Saquon Barkley runs, not that necessarily it's about lack of speed, but that certainly doesn't help. Once he hits a corner, then what? You know, can a guy make a play to make it a 10-yard run instead of a 70? I think that element is absolutely something they need on both sides of the ball, no doubt.
Talking to Ben Standing, he's got his Washington mock draft scenarios up on The Athletic. By the way, I just noticed in your no-trade version, you have him taking Ezeraku from Boston College, and then at 61, you have him taking Oladejo from UCLA, who I actually think there's you could make the case that he could go very early in the second round. So you went edge with the first two picks in your no trade version.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of didn't want to just go edge cornerback like I did in the other one, just to, you know, do some variance. But you know, like I said, if you told me they did that again, they have, you know, they're an older group. They don't have any youth, and you know, the upside play is there. You know, again, Dietrich Weiss is a free agent after this year. You know, other than Dorrance Armstrong, you know, they don't, right? I mean, who's around after 2025? And even Armstrong, right? It was a 3-year deal. Typically that third year, not always necessarily a lock to stay. So, you know, they need more than just one player there. Again, they only have the 5 picks. They may not have a choice. You know, they've got to address all their issues, but if there's 2 young edge rushers there that they like in both of those picks, I mean, I say go for it. Again, it gives you that speed, raises the ceiling of that group. And, even if it is a little bit more for a 2026 than for this year, That's fine. We're still only in year two of this regime, and you know it isn't as great as last year was. They still have a lot of holes and fixes that they've got to address.
In your trade draft, the two trades with the Bears and then the Chargers, I loved the running back that you selected for them, Devin Neal. By the way, another guy, team captain, high accolades, high, you know, intel from the people who report on this stuff that he's just a great kid. Plus, he's a really good back from Kansas. And then in your non-trade one, I love Taj Brooks, too. I like both of your backs. And I would imagine those are day three selections in this draft. But it's really hard. I think like with the edge rushers after maybe that top five or six, if there is a cutoff, you could probably take the next 10 guys and put them in any order. I think you can do that with the running backs too after Jeunty. I think you can take 10 or 11 of them and everybody might have a different order with all of them.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I tried to look for a running back that you could use on three downs, right? Because like there's some guys who are like a 4-3, 40 guy, but just, you know, they're yeah, fairly small, not going to be able to be an every down back. And then there's some other guys who are bigger, you know, in between tackle types who aren't necessarily going to help you in the passing game. And I felt like Neal was a good hybrid of both. My only somewhat worry is for both of these guys actually, is that they had a crazy workload in college. And, you know, running back is already a position where, you know, the shelf life is not terribly long, but,
yep,
you know, it is what it is, you know. So, you know, if fourth and sixth round picks, you know, not saying, you know, you worry about that down the line, but to some degree you worry about that down the line. So, I think both those guys have pretty good all-around skill sets that would make sense. The team captain part as well, just highly productive, et cetera. So, yeah, I'm with you, though. Like, I could have swapped out several other running backs and, you know, it would look totally reasonable and fine, and it, you know, and address, you know, the concerns or just help bolster that room.
So you mentioned something that I think was interesting, and I just made a note of it to come back to. You know, if let's just say Azaraku is the last guy that's worthy of the first round, they're not going to use a first round on a running back. They're okay. You know, maybe corner is there, maybe safety is there, maybe wide receiver is there, but it's possible that the best player available, especially depending on how this draft goes after Campbell and Membo, the two top offensive linemen in this draft, it's possible, I think you mentioned Connerly from Oregon, that there could be a really good tackle at 29, and it might be the best player on their board. I think you have to take that player unless that player, and really in today's game, these guys seem so interchangeable, right? But if there's a tackle there that they believe can line up and play right tackle, don't you take that player if it's the best player available on the board?
Yeah, I would. I mean, so there's two things
here.
One with tackles, if you look at, and we talked about this the other day, but if you just generally look at some of the big boards, there's a huge gap between the top five or six guys who will probably be picked somewhere in the top, you know, 25, 30 picks. And then all the way into the third round, there's like almost nothing. There's almost nobody there who's going to get picked. Maybe one or two guys who are going to get picked. So if you want one, you got to react early. And that's kind of why I think don't be surprised if there's a run on tackles or you know, some guys who are maybe a guard tackle early. But then, yeah, I mean, again, like you know, go back to, you know, I asked Adam Peters and Dan Quinn at the combine, well, is Brandon Coleman your left tackle? And their response was to say nice things, but they didn't say he was. It was like, okay, clearly they're saying they think they can do a little bit better at tackle than they make a massive trade for Tunsil. That wasn't just like let's just get some competition. No, that was like, we are going all in on this. Cool. So they're moving Coleman to right tackle or to the right side. And that doesn't mean they don't think he could be the guy. But if you've already moved him once, then you're kind of saying, well, maybe we can do better here as well. And again, ultimately on offense, it all revolves around helping the quarterback. So if if you had Tunsil and if they have a first round pick at tackle that they think is legit and turns out to be right, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
That's a huge deal combined with, you know, Cosme when he gets back, combined with Biotis, you know, that's a big deal. And then, you know, look, Coleman, offensive line depth, as the Eagles have shown us, is a good thing, right? I mean, Coleman could be the interim right guard while Cosme's out.
He
could challenge
and then,
Allegretti,
and then a
down
replacement
the line.
For Allegretti long term,
right? And also, like, if you just look at them for this year, right? If you include Wiley and the projected starting group right now, I think there's like six offensive linemen you'd say kind of make the team. And then after that, I mean, it's, you know, the Nate Herbig and Chris Paul. Like, it's not like they have like guys that are definitely locked in or guys who are ready to be the next, you know, the potential starter in a year or two down the line. So I would have zero issue with that. And look, they brought Connerly in for that group 30 visit. I know that they've looked at a guy like Wyatt Millen from West Virginia. They've looked at him closely. He's a college tackle, maybe have to move the guard. We'll see. So, you know, they're definitely looking at it. I mean, of course, they're looking at every position. But, no, I would have zero issue if they went that way.
You know, there's another position that I think is interesting. I mean, you know, they drafted Brandon Coleman in the third round last year. They took, you know, Ben Sinnott in the second, understood. But we don't know that they're convinced that they feel like they got it right there. Zach Ertz is, you know, winding down his career, and Bates is a blocking tight end. Well, Jaden Daniels, tight end, Mason Taylor at LSU for 2 years. Yeah, I've seen him just continue to climb boards, like maybe even into the late first round is a possibility. And he is impressive, and he is an every down tight end. I mean, he blocks well too. So do you think that's completely off the board, tight end?
I don't think it's completely off the board. I just think, like, and this is at least how I look at the world, like when I say draft an offensive lineman, even if that meant putting a potential starter like Coleman on the bench, and he may never play, right? If everybody's healthy, maybe he doesn't play. But you need that, right? At tight end, though, you have Ertz, you have Bates, you have Sinnott, and I'm with you. We don't quite know what Sinnott is yet, but okay, you know, just give him time. Okay, but then what? Like, I know they did keep a fourth tight end last year, typically in Colton Yankoff, but, like, that was he was a guy that was like, you know, right. If they had to make a move, you can kind of move on. Keeping a fourth tight end, like, you have to keep four is not necessarily great roster flexibility. And, you know, how much is he going to play? I mean, unless Zach Ertz gets hurt or falls off, he's going to seemingly play a ton. So that would be my only hesitation. But, yes, in terms of the player, you know, he was Jaden Daniels' tight end. He's a very talented player. He may be the, you know, he –
And he's every down, by the way. He blocks. I mean, he's a fluid pass catcher, but he blocks as well. And he played big in some of their biggest games. I mean, Jaden beat Alabama in overtime in his junior year. That was really the game that got Jaden going. His next to last year, the first year at LSU, and found Mason Taylor in overtime. In regulation to tie it. Go ahead.
Also, Mason Taylor's dad is Jason Taylor. And, you know,
yes,
Jason Taylor, I think, owes this franchise something. He freely admitted Dan Snyder helped his retirement plan. So he could give a little bit back by having his son turn into a viable player here. Sure, why not?
There was a lot going on with Jason Taylor here. Last one for you. So you put together these, you know, two trading back twice versus not trading at all. Which of the two, if you had to wager on, if I told you one of these two scenarios came to fruition, which of the two would you wager on?
I guess I'd be surprised if Adam Peters doesn't find a way to get more picks. Now, I don't know if that means trading 29. It could be trading 61. It could even be trading the fourth round pick to get, say, you know, like the year when Washington drafted Sam Howell, right? They traded a fourth to get two fifths. And one of them was Sam Howell. I think the other one was Cole Turner. So, you know, it could be something like that. It doesn't have to be the first, but, you know, that's just the sexier option, and you get more stuff conceivably, whatever. So I would be surprised if they don't make a trade, whether it's, again, at 29, you know, that part's tough to say. But, you know, I imagine Peters is not going to finish the draft with five picks. And I mean more, not less.
Thank you. Read Ben all week long. He'll be back on with us probably before the draft and certainly after it. Talk to you later.
Awesome, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. By the way, this show is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open up the app, type in Team 980, and hit the subscribe button, please. I'm on live on our YouTube page from 10 to 1. Craig Hoffman's on live from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like this stream. Hit the like button and the subscribe button when you get there. Alan May will join us next. We'll talk about Caps Penguins with Alan when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.